Pardon me, but how would you like to have played an unexpected round of golf with the king himself, Arnold Palmer? Well, as I welcome you to the newest episode of Musings on Golf, you'll find out how that came to be for our special guest today, along with a number of other very cool stories from a man who has played nearly all of the top 100 golf courses in the United States. My name is Kelly Elbin, welcoming you back to our weekly podcast. My good friend, Jenna Self, our executive producer, who has been crisscrossing the state of Texas, supporting her granddaughter's high school marching band initiatives, is back at the controls. And we're looking ahead to a very exciting episode with a gentleman named Joe Bronson, whose new book, Pardon Me, the word par has all caps to it, Pardon Me, 50 Years of Golf, One Hole at a Time, is a book that I've really enjoyed, and you'll learn more about it and about Joe as we progress. Also want to look ahead to the rest of the month of November, next week, and with a special Veterans Day episode with Billy Hurley III. Billy is the only player on the PGA Tour who has ever won a PGA Tour event who went to one of the service academies in the United States. The following week, we will have Cameron Young, who was a key member of the United States Ryder Cup team that came up a little bit short to the Europeans last month. Cameron's dad, David, joined us leading into the Ryder Cup, and really looking forward to Cameron. And then on Thanksgiving week, we're going to give thanks in a lot of ways by spending some time with my good friend, Dennis Walters, member of the PGA of America Hall of Fame, just was accorded that honor. Dennis is a World Golf Hall of Fame member, paralyzed from the waist down when he was in his early 20s. And all Dennis did from that, making the ultimate lemonade out of lemons, is go on and perform thousands of golf trick shot shows with his trusty sidekick dogs along with him. And Dennis, now a member, as I mentioned, of the World Golf Hall of Fame. So much to be thankful for when we visit with Dennis during the week of Thanksgiving. Well, also on the back end of the interview with Joe Bronson, I want to talk about the decision by LIV Golf to go from 54 holes to 72. There's only three events, by the way, left on the PGA Tour Fall Series, and there are a number of notable, very recognizable names who are vying to get into the top 100. It's down from 125, as it's been for years on the PGA Tour, to gain their full playing privileges for the next year. A lot of guys between 90 and 110. And finally, I want to pay tribute to pioneer in our game, and frankly, one of the finest individuals I've ever met in the game of golf, in the industry of golf, who passed away on November 3rd. First off, Joe Bronson. Okay, so who is Joe Bronson? Well, Joe Bronson is a longtime business executive whose passion for the game of golf is pretty incredible. As I mentioned, 93 of the top 100 courses he's played. He's a member at Monterey Peninsula Country Club in Pebble Beach, lives just a mile from the first tee at Pebble Beach Golf Links. And Joe has written three books, all related to golf. And his new one, this Pardon Me, 50 Years of Golf, One Hole at a Time, really resonated with me on a lot of fronts. It's a collection of unique stories and also a lot of opinions from Joe. He talks about LIV Golf and a number of other topics. Joe kind of reminds me, it's funny, I have a good buddy by the name of Steve Voskanian, who's a member here at East Point Country Club in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, where I live. Much like Bronson has played golf courses throughout the states and all over the world, he has an extensive area in this book on golf in the UK, Scotland, and England. Voskanian, I called him earlier today as we record this on Wednesday, November the 5th. I called Steve and I said, Steve, can you give me a ballpark of how many rounds or how many golf courses that you've played in your lifetime? And he immediately said 925. And it wasn't like a ballpark. He said, I've played 925 golf courses throughout the world during my lifetime. Interestingly enough, Steve grew up and played a lot of golf in Northern California, and Monterey Peninsula was one of the few that he didn't play until he left to come east and work here in Florida. But I really like, as I mentioned, I like Bronson's book in a lot of ways. I like his approach. And one of the things that struck me early on is Joe Bronson talked about his top priority. He said, currently, my top priority is to play golf with my son. We've been playing together for 38 years, and now he has a family and a 6-year-old son of his own. My son doesn't play often, but he has to play with me. And he identifies a handful of days every year that he and his son must play together. And it just speaks to how great our game is and what it can mean in so many ways. The mention about Arnold Palmer and his opportunity to play with the King, it's really kind of a fascinating story. And Joe didn't even realize he was going to be playing a full day with Arnold. And as it turned out to be, obviously, one of the great memories for him of all time. He selects his top 18 holes in the United States based on the first hole through the 18th. So, for example, he identifies for him the very his favorite first hole that he's ever played is the first hole at Augusta National Golf Club, all the way to his favorite 18th hole, which I figured would, well, of course it would be Pebble Beach, right? But no, it's for him, it's his favorite 18th he's played is the 18th at Whistling Straits, which has played host to many PGA championships and a Ryder Cup. Bronson, he knows a lot of people. Steve Young, a great Hall of Fame quarterback, writes the foreword to the book. And I just I'm a big fan of what Bronson has to cover here. And I think again it goes back to what our game is about. For Joe, he says that he's, you know, hanging on desperately to a single digit handicap now in his 70s, but he's a golf lifer. He's a guy who plays the game because he loves to play the game. And I've been very fortunate here on Musings on Golf to be able to talk with Jack Nicklaus and be able to interview Gary Player and to have the opportunity coming up to talk with Cameron Young. But golf is also the Joe Bronsons of the world who have such a passion for the game. And I think you're really going to enjoy this unique and interesting time with Joe. Again, the book is Pardon Me, 50 Years of Golf, One Hole at a Time, with my special guest, Joe Bronson. And you will hear that interview right after you hear from our good friends, our corporate partners at William and Harry and Titleist. Our friends at William and Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William and Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com.
Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are the best performing, most consistent in the game. So how does the best get better? You start by listening to the best players in the world. You experiment, iterate, validate. You trust the best process to create the best golf ball the game has ever known. The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. More speed off the tee, more control with your irons, more spin with your wedges, and more opportunity to shoot your lowest score.
Our guest today has had a passionate affair with the great game of golf, and that love shines through in his new book, Pardon Me. By the way, PAR is all caps. Pardon Me, 50 Years of Golf, One Hole at a Time. He has played 93 of the top 100 courses in the United States, plus great layouts stretching from the UK all the way to New Zealand. Yet his story goes much deeper, as the famous athlete who penned the foreword of the book notes, Joe's ability to connect golf with the broader themes of lives, ambition, challenge, adversity, and resilience, will have you assessing your own life experiences. So much to cover with author, blogger, and golfer Joe Bronson here on Musings on Golf. Hey, Joe, so happy to have you with us. How are you?
I'm great, Kelly. Thanks. I've just came back from the Women's Mid-Am, which we're holding here in Monterey Peninsula Country Club. Pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool. And you've, you know, we talked a little bit before we went on with this interview, Joe. You are a big Connecticut Husky fan, and for good reasons, with the women having won 10 national championships, the men only 4, Joe. And you probably have the Connecticut golf hat on. You're originally from Connecticut before you made the move out west. What took you from the eastern part of the country out to Northern California?
Yeah, I did a acquisition for my company at the time of what was the 6th largest semiconductor company in the world. And I kind of never left after that. I was there for 5 years, and then I transitioned and worked for Applied Materials, which is a major semiconductor equipment company, and I was there for 25 years. So eventually ended up as the president and the chief financial officer.
And I know you mentioned that you lived for 5 years in England, and golf has been constant. Yeah, golf's been the constant, Joe, whether East Coast of the United States, Europe, or the West Coast of the United States. It is such a passion of yours. In fact, you live on the 13th hole at the fantastic Spyglass Hill in Pebble Beach. You've also written books before this one. Joe, talk a little bit about Pardon Me, what inspired that book, and particularly, Joe, the focus you decided to take with this particular book.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a little bit strange. During the pandemic, because you notice I wrote the first book in 17, the second one was real fast, 18, then nothing. But I had still maintained my blogging and things of that sort. During the pandemic, I, like everybody else, was kind of flipped out being at home. And so I started writing some pretty crazy stuff that I thought might, you know, might be of value, but I won't go through that. But a good friend of mine from Santa Clara University got wind of this, and he said, "Look, you should write another book. You should write another book. You've got all these experiences, you know, and you have a variation to cover." And so that he was a big motivator of me doing this. And so I got started. It took me a little longer than a year, but I got it done.
And Joe, variation's a good word that you use there. So it isn't just about Joe Bronson playing XYZ golf club. It's much more than that. And that was obviously the desire you had to put that content out in addition to the on-course experiences, right?
Yeah, my view on golf is that it transcends all of these things, and we'll talk further about this as we talk about some of these topics. But you know, golf is bigger than money. It's bigger than individuals. It's bigger than I want to embrace the fact that at the end of the day, the game is very strong as a character element, a character builder, and absorbs a lot of values. People that don't play golf or think that we're just running around chasing a ball, it's a whole different experience. And I wanted to give the reader, I wanted to integrate those thoughts, you know, through the book. And I think,
yeah, and I think you did a really good job of integrating those thoughts. You also have a good deal of star power in this book, right from the start, with the foreword written by the great Pro Football Hall of Famer, Steve Young, who played quarterback for the Niners. How did you get to know Steve, and why did you sort of tap him on the shoulder and say, "Steve, would love to have you write this forward for me"?
Oh, that's what Steve is a great guy, by the way. So I met Steve while he was playing quarterback Not too many people know that Steve is a lawyer and an accomplished financial executive. He is a partner in a private equity firm. And so we worked on investments together, and he also picked my brain on various topics. And I had a lot of time for Steve, and we clicked. And, I've had a fabulous relationship. I actually helped him with his Hall of Fame speech in Canton. I was so happy to be at Canton with him. You know, it was great. He also, we used to give him when he started, we were really happy when he gave up the game. I think we were really worried about too many concussions. And when he started broadcasting, you know, I was a longtime 49ers season ticket holder. So we would be driving to the game and we'd be criticizing him about how terrible he was as a broadcaster. It was early days. We got a lot of kick. Steve is, he's a humble guy. He gets it. He's got a tremendous value system. And I can't tell you all the things that he's done. He's got a great foundation, which we support. And so when I asked him to write this forward for me, it was a no-brainer. You know, it was really nice of him to do this for me.
Just the kind of guy that who's people know, but just the kind of guy you want to be around because he is so humble and just himself, right? And look,
yeah. It's a very standard response. You talk to anybody, you'll get the similar response. Steve is a humble, very accomplished, value-driven individual. I mean, I've never heard anything negative said about him, actually.
So let's delve a little bit into the book. And the first person is very much aligned with what the characteristics of Steve Young. I was fortunate through my background, having been the director of communications for the PGA of America, I knew Mr. Palmer a little bit and was always held him in high esteem. You, Joe Bronson, had an opportunity to play a pro-am round or play a round of golf with Arnold. How did that come to be?
I was very, very surprised. This was put together by Tom Siebel. Tom is a very famous executive in Silicon Valley. He's currently still an executive chair of an AI company. But I was a major customer of his. And so he invited me to join him and Palmer at Pebble Beach. But I thought it was going to be one of these, you play a couple of holes with the guy, and there's, 50 other guys, et cetera, and it's fine. So and I've got the house here. So I show up and I walk into the Pebble Beach Pro Shop and the guy says, Mr. Palmer is waiting for you on the driving range. And I said, really? So I went to the driving range and lo and behold, it's just him and Tom and that's it. And I'm wow, and Palmer, the first thing he does, he gives me the umbrella pin, which I still have on my blazer, one of my blazers. And we, proceeded to warm up. And here's the funny part. It was a crazy day in May. We usually don't get any rain of any kind, but the clouds, came over Pebble Beach. And there was a little bit of thunder, et cetera. And so, we were not going to play or not going to tee off on time. So we went up to the gallery restaurant, which if you've been there, is right next to the first tee at Pebble. We walk in, it's now a fancy coffee shop. Prices are now up about 3x what they were those days. But anyway, we walk in, you can imagine within 30 seconds, everybody in that room knew who was sitting there. And they all, one by one, are all coming over asking for a photo and he just signed them all, took pictures, couldn't be more, fabulous about it, right? which really says something about things these days. But so then the skies cleared and we were set to go. So when you leave the gallery restaurant and head for the first tee, you go down a flight of stairs and the first tee's right there. Well, we opened the door to the gallery restaurant. There must have been 1,000 people there. And I was really blown away because, you know, it looked like your first tee of the AT&T. Somehow news had spread, et cetera. And lo and behold, here they are. And so we get to the first tee and Palmer flips me the ball and says, well, you know, show me where we're supposed to go. And that was it, you know, and he couldn't have been nicer. A lot of fun to play with and just full of fantastic stories. And it was a crazy day of weather. Like I said, we got to the seventh hole and we both hit four irons. You know, the hole's 107 yards, right? We both hit four irons. He hit his into the ocean. I managed to make par. I actually beat him by one stroke on the front, but that was kind of it. I think he was even on the back. But I have a signed flag of the event. They closed the course and it was just the three of us and a photographer. So I got this fabulous book of photos from the day and, you know, we had dinner and I just can't say enough about the class and how great he made us feel. Just amazing.
You know, I've told this story before, and I think it's worth retelling in regards to Arnold. Peter King, the great sports writer for many, many years, was at the Baltimore Ravens training camp. This had to have been 10, 15 years ago. And he was watching the players coming out of practice and signing autographs. And he noticed that a good deal of them were just doing a quick scribble and, you know, moving on. And then he looked at Ed Reed, who obviously had a fabulous career. It's now in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And Ed Reed, although he has a short name, methodically signed his name very carefully. And he said Ed, you know, I noticed you took your time. Is that something that you've always done? He said, no, I noticed Arnold Palmer doing that when I played in a pro-am with him. And the point being no different than what Arnold always preached. If you're signing something for somebody, they need to remember who that is who signed the autograph. And that was, I think Arnold influenced a lot of people that way. But he did so many things that way. Right, Joe?
I have 9 signed Arnold Palmer balls, and you'll never forget who signed them because it's clear as a bell. And that's the way he was. I mean, he really had a special relationship to those. He respected those people that followed him, the army and all of that stuff. He had a lot of time for those people. And it's, in my view, unique in this, particularly today.
So pleased to be joined by Joe Bronson, whose far-reaching new book is entitled, Pardon Me, 50 Years of Golf, One Hole at a Time. Hey, Joe, how did you get started in the game? Were you an East Coast kid to begin with, born and raised in?
Well, you probably won't believe this, but you know, I grew up in the inner city, so I'm an inner city kid. Oh. And all I did was play basketball, football, and baseball. And I played basketball at the NCAA level. But I played for years, and that's all we did. I mean, we were just on the courts for hours and hours and hours and hours. Golf, I was a middle, you know, I came from, I would call it middle class, middle income. Everything was cool, but golf was a rich man's game. Golf for us was the shells. When it was raining out and we couldn't play anything. It'd be black and white, and we would look at each other and say, "What are these guys whispering?" You know, what are these guys whispering? So golf was nothing. Like it was so far away from my sphere, you know, so I went, graduated from, I was the first kid that graduated from my family in college. I went to work, and lo and behold, I find myself having to play in a golf tournament at Sleepy Hollow, of all places, one of the great, great venues. They put me together with two women at the end because we had never, I'd never held a golf club in my life. I think I shot something like 160, and, you know, it was a disaster. But, you know, the problem is being competitive. I mean, you can't imagine what's like playing basketball in the inner city. You really, there's a competitive juice that will never fade. Right. And so I said, this is BS. This isn't beating me. So I started taking lessons, and I was, you know, I was in the 90s within 6 months. And then, got better and better. And then at one point I lost it all, gave it up, and then came back to it. When I came back to it, I got down to like, 8, and then I got to 1, and I'm currently at 7. So crazy.
That's terrific.
But my good friend from England taught me a lot, and that was, he had a great swing, and he helped me a lot. So it was great.
I used the term far-reaching earlier when I talked about the book. You do cover a wide variety of topics, Joe, and one of which, and you go extensively on this, is golf, the game at large before COVID and then post-pandemic. Joe, those were two very, very different scenarios. And along with the incredible cost to play certain courses now, but pre-pandemic, Joe, golf was not necessarily in a great spot.
Golf was in trouble pre-pandemic. It was very much, you know, country club, private club dues, initiation fees were falling like a stone. And it was all due to the fact that the economy was tepid at best, and things were very uncertain. And then young families, you know, basically the idea was, well, it takes too much time to play. And then women were being discriminated in certain places, you know, et cetera. So the game was really in a steep decline prior to COVID, in my view. We had a couple of courses in San Jose that the politicians wanted to carve up into housing. And, you know, so all of this was all under, I think it was pretty much under siege. Pebble Beach was advertising, you know, they were this deal and that deal. Pebble Beach never advertises, you know, it's amazing. So then COVID hits, right? And then nobody can do anything. They're all condemned to being inside, and nothing's going on. And then around April timeframe, I know our courses, you know, we all closed and nothing's going on. And then all of a sudden, you know, it was okay to do something and come out. And all of a sudden, golf turned out to be one of the only things you could do.
Yes.
So these people that were playing video games and going crazy started, you know, coming out and playing some of the public courses. And one of the things, I don't know what you think, but I think golfers are very compliant people. You should, you know, here are the rules, play by, you know, play by the rules.
Yeah.
I did a couple of blog posts and some of the contraptions that were invented to avoid you touching the pins and things.
Yes, you know, I remember them well.
And all of a sudden, you know, things were going crazy. People were really coming out, and the millennials were abandoning video games and coming out and starting to play, and it just caught on like crazy. Our club, went from, it was getting impossible to book a tee time at a private club. You know, it was really, really interesting. And as a result, it's, you know, people, once they start getting good at it or a reasonable skill at it, as we all know, they kept coming, you know, and it's really continued. And, you know, the game is in really good shape right now. if we don't screw it up for other reasons, but you know, it's really really in pretty good shape.
Now, I think by our very natures, Joe, we don't want to sit around. We don't want to, and that's what I think people started to realize. Like you said, hey, I can get out and do things, be outside and be with my buddies and in a quote safe environment. And it really was a uniquely so almost with golf, a tremendous boon.
Sure, I would go out on the 13th hole here, and I would hit shots to the green, knowing that nobody was coming.
Yeah, right.
Nobody was coming up, so I would just grab the shag bag, and that's what I would do while I was here. You know,
hey Joe, a lot of things I like about your book, and you do a really nice job, in my opinion, of kind of weaving in and out of the professional and the personal, if you will. One of your sections, you talk about your top priority, as you describe it, playing golf with your son, and the days that you have to play golf together with your son. What if you could talk about that passion of wanting to be with your son, the days that you have to play, and he has his own life now. So you're the grandfather, I would think, in a lot of ways, wants to spend time with the son, has the grandkids, but to be able to have that bond with your boy has to be very special, Joe.
It is very special. He was taught properly at age 7. And, you know, he gradually got onto the course probably at age 9. And we played together all the time. And one of the things that I did, I never forced it on him. I didn't, you know, browbeat him. I got him, you know, when we first started, we do it in half-hour increments because kids only have that kind of attention span, particularly for something like this. We got him together with other kids, and so it really, you know, he really took to it. He was good at it. And then we moved to England when he was 11 years old. And, you know, I joined a club, and then he got to play, and he had to play with me every Sunday. When I say he had to play, I didn't have to drag him. We played together every Sunday, no matter what, rain, shine, didn't matter. And we would discuss it. You know, we've had discussions about everything, the facts of life to cars, to girlfriends, to, you know, business, you know, his career, you know, et cetera. So, and he played golf in high school and some in college. And he's, you know, he's damn good. I mean, it just annoys me.
one of those days that you have to play. There's certain days that you must play golf together, right, Joe?
The days he has to play on my birthday, he has to play on the day after Thanksgiving, he has to play on one day during Christmas, and he has to play on Father's Day. Those are months. And we do that. And it's fantastic. And the thing about this, and I'll stop there, when you play with your son, you always win. Because you win if you win. And then if you lose, you win. Because he's having a great time. And he can go home and tell his mother that he beat his father again. You know?
And always you win because of the time. Earlier this year, we had Padraig Harrington on our show, and he told a lovely story, Joe, in regards to, you know, having kids play the game, but not going too far, at least early on. In other words, you know, it's okay to stop and have a Coke. It's okay to stop and take them instead of playing another 9 or another 18. Let's go get an ice cream. He said, because the kids will always remember, your son or your daughter will always remember that time that they spent having that Coke or having that ice cream with you. They may not remember what they shot on that back 9, but they'll remember that time. And that's such the beauty of the game in so many ways, Joe.
When we would play with my son in England on that Sunday, I think he looked forward to the sandwich he was going to get at the filling station on the way to the golf course. That was more important.
They really enjoy our conversation with Joe Bronson, whose new book, Pardon Me, 50 Years of Golf, One Hole at a Time, is available. It's got to be on Amazon, Joe, I would imagine. Where else can our listeners find your book?
It's on Amazon. On all, you know, Goodreads. It's on Barnes & Noble. You could also order it directly, actually, and more efficiently from my website. And it actually will get a lower price.
That's what, josephbronson.com?
Yeah. That's you'll get it faster and cheaper. Not much cheaper, but cheaper.
But cheaper. Hey, Joe, you've played, I mentioned you play almost all of the top 100 courses in the world. You write about a good number of the holes that you've played in the book, both good and bad. Joe, how about, let's get into this a little bit. How about give me a few holes that you've played over the years, maybe a two or three that really stand out, that are highly memorable. And you also, unfortunately, have a section called the worst designed golf holes. So maybe give me one there, Joe, that is like, oh my goodness, I don't need to ever play that hole again.
Happy to do, particularly the worst one. It's hard to pick the best ones because there's so many. So I'm going to pick Royal Darnock, number 17, which is just a fabulous par 4. You have two ways to go. You can go right or left, and the shots to the green. It's a very impressive hole, and I think a lot of people like that hole. I also like, for different reasons, the 18th at St. Andrews and North Berwick because of the ambiance. You know, you have a gallery and the challenge of knocking it over the road and getting on in two and trying to make birdie, as I did last June. And, you know, that's very special to me.
How about as far as the worst design?
The worst design by far, okay? This is the worst hole on the planet. It is the 18th hole at Spanish Bay. It is disgusting. Everybody who knows me knows that opinion.
All right, why is it so bad, Joe Bronson?
It's so bad. It's a par 5 that even a big hitter is going to have trouble with. For a par 5, it's a very narrow fairway with there's a whole bunch of junk on the left and the right. There's no way to get there in two, in my view, for a long hitter. I don't care if you hit it 330 or whatever. The second shot has to be completely accurate into this kind of looks like a right angle. The hole is kind of almost a right angle. You knock it there, and then your approach shot is over a gorge, which is really stupid. On top, and then to make even matters worse, the green is horizontal, so shots don't hold the green. And you know, the green is huge horizontally, and if you go over the green, you're dead. I mean, you're just completely dead. It's just stupid. For the high handicapper, it's going to be a big number.
Sounds to me like you avoid playing Spanish Bay whenever possible.
That one is by far the worst.
You were going to give me another. You were going to give me another top one, Joe. Which one? Give me another hole that stands out.
The better or the worst?
Better.
Another one would be King's Barnes 18. It's really cool. I love that hole. I love King's Barnes, period. But that hole is pretty cool to finish on. It's a really straightforward, challenging. You know, this past weekend they played it in a downpour. It was really unbelievable. We fortunately had good weather. But anyway, that'd be another one.
Joe, I was fortunate enough to play in May with seven other buddies. We played 5 courses in England and 5 in Scotland. Indeed, we played at King's Barnes. It was a real, real treat. For you, having lived over there for 5 years, how do you define the difference, maybe culturally, in what golf means in the UK versus what it means in the United States?
Well, I actually prefer it over there. They have more respect for the game and the way things are managed over there. There's a lot of things I don't like about it, which I try to have time to point out. But they, which is why I think they do better in the Ryder Cup, by the way. They just have more respect for the game. It's more part of a culture. Golf is more part of the European, particularly in Ireland and England. It's more part of the culture. There's a lot of courses. Everybody plays, and access is easy and affordable and cheap. You can go real high, or you can go, you know, you can go pay £5 to go play somewhere. And I think the access, and that gives access to the kids. They don't have to worry about, you know, you can't play because of this, that, you know. It's I think that it's way better from that standpoint. More embraced, more people play, both male and female.
Yeah,
here it's much more commercial type enterprise.
Yeah, I agree. Obviously, there's a lot of good to be said about golf in the United States, but I noticed in playing with my buddies in May how very much it is part of the fabric of so many communities, where you would have golf courses literally abutting one another or several, and they were, as you said, all very affordable and playable. It was, to me, it struck me like instead of kids going out to play baseball after school here in the States, what have you, they go play golf after school. It's a big playground to learn the game of golf, and it's very much community based.
Now, my best friend lives in he lives in the south of England now, but when he lived in, he's Scottish, and he was born in Troon, and so they had access to the, you know, they played Troon after school.
Yeah,
you know, no problem, no biggie. Yeah.
Hey, we're winding up here with Joe Bronson here on Musings on Golf. Joe, I always conclude our interviews with a question. We've had a variety of answers to it in terms of a dream foursome. Three other individuals with whom you would play a round of golf, whether they're still with us or they're deceased. Who would those three be for you, Joe? And where would you play that kind of magical round of golf?
For me, it would be Arnold Palmer, for sure. Tom Watson.
Huh.
And my
ah.
And where we would play, I would play our short course here at Monterey Peninsula or North Berwick. And third one would be Bandon Dunes, the Bandon Dunes course. Either any of those three would be fine.
How do you think Arnold and your son would get along in that dream scenario? What would they talk about?
Well, I think they would be exchanging, you know, my son would be asking him. My son's 46 now, so he would have quite a few questions about, his experiences and his life and how he views things, particularly how he views things today. And I think it would be a very enlightening dialogue. Myself.
Joe, this has been a very enlightening dialogue that we've had. The book is Pardon Me, 50 Years of Golf, One Hole at a Time. Joe Bronson's been my guest. JosephBronson.com is where you can purchase the book, maybe a slightly lower cost. And Joe, you put a lot of blogs out there. I enjoy reading. You enjoy writing. You enjoy writing about golf, and you post regularly, right?
I do. I have now over 300 posts. I think we're about 3:30 now. And last week we did one on the Ryder Cup. My prediction almost came out. I had predicted a 14-14 tie.
Oh.
It almost came out.
The Yanks made it close on Sunday. Hey, Joe, thank you. This has been a delight. Really appreciate you being with us here on Musings on Golf.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks so much, Kelly.
At William & Harry Golf, comfort meets purpose. Through their care campaign, William & Harry is partnering with charities to give back, donating a portion of every qualifying sale to support your cause.
Enhance your next fundraiser with William & Harry customized golf shoes, auction packages, or exclusive giveaways. Crafted from fine deerskin, calfskin, and exotic leathers, William & Harry golf shoes offer all-day comfort from the course to the clubhouse in vibrant, eye-catching colors. Learn more at williamandharry.com or email info@williamandharry.com. William & Harry, style with a mission. Well, we thank Joe Bronson very much for his time, his insights. Particularly, Joe talked a lot, as you heard, about what was going on in golf pre-pandemic and what has happened since. And he's absolutely right. In 2019, golf was not in a particularly good spot. And as has been noted in many areas, the industry was a beneficiary of COVID. There's no question about it. I think, you know, the continuing challenge for golf is how do you make the game appealing to different people based on different experiences, based on their, you know, the kind of money they want to spend, the kind of lifestyle that they want that can work golf into it. But as Joe talked about, golf is kind of a microcosm of life, and it's bigger than money. And I was very, very pleased to have him. Okay, let's talk a couple of things. LIV Golf's decision. So the LIV, L-I-V, does stand for the Roman for 54. And in their existence, they've played 54 holes of golf, and they've made a decision, and I'm surprised it's taken this long to go to 72 holes. And it's primarily what they're trying to do is be more in sync with the official world golf rankings. That really, if you look at where the official world golf rankings gives their points, it's for 72 hole events. So I think that helps LIV Golf. But what doesn't help LIV Golf is the official world golf rankings group doesn't look too kindly to tour events that have team events that are baked into it. That's exactly what you have with LIV Golf. And I don't know that is particularly helpful to them. And you also have a number of players out there who can't be relegated on LIV Golf because they're under contract, and they can't be, even if they play poorly, they don't lose their place on the LIV Tour. And that doesn't help them either when it comes to world golf rankings. We will see how that plays out, but I think that's a good move for them, long overdue. Personally, again, not a huge fan of LIV Golf, hasn't gained much traction. Maybe this helps them to start to gain a little bit of that traction, even though it'll still be a shotgun start, et cetera. But I think the 72 holes makes more sense. And frankly, for the amount of money that they're playing for, they should be playing 72 holes. 3 weeks to go on the PGA Tour Fall Series. And as I mentioned going into the interview with Joe Bronson, you've got a handful of very recognizable names: Max Homa, Adam Scott, Billy Horschel, Tom Kim, who are all between 90 and 110 on the PGA Tour money list. And it's the top 100 that get their full playing privileges for the 2026 season. And with three to go, that's down to the wire for a number of these guys. You know, and the PGA Tour is changing and will continue to change. And this is one big one, to go from 125, the top 25 on the money list, to the top 100 is really a massive change, and one that one of many that you're going to continue to see on the PGA Tour. I mentioned about Billy Hurley III. I'm really excited about having Billy next week. Billy Hurley III graduated from the Naval Academy, and as I mentioned, he's the only U.S. Military Service Academy veteran who has won on the PGA Tour. He won at Congressional Country Club outside of Washington, the Quicken Loans, one of Tiger's events that he staged at Congressional. And Billy's doing a lot with the Billy Hurley III Foundation. We're going to talk to him about that and a special interview coming up. Judy Bell. I'm going to close with Judy Bell, who I got to know a little bit during my time with the PGA of America. Judy Bell was the first woman to be elected the president of the United States Golf Association. And yes, because of that, she was a pioneer. But Judy Bell in addition to just being such a, as my friend Janice Self said, just such a first-class person. Belle helped a lot of people. Judy Belle was really kind of a USGA lifer. She played in USGA events as a junior. She became a USGA volunteer in 1961. In the 70s, she was a rules official. She later served on the Women's Committee for the USGA. And then in 96, she was elected as the 54th president of the USGA. And during her tenure, and really afterward, she was a huge advocate for programs to take golf to youth, to minorities, to the disabled. And she helped specifically so many young women and girls in the game. Janice Self was telling me before we went on that when she lived in Scotland, Janice was a good player for a long time. And Judy, she talked to Judy one time, and Judy offered to get her into an event in the United States when Janice was back home in the U.S. where she was born. And she took her up on that, and she competed in the event. And it was just one example of the lives that Judy Belle touched. Judy passed away at 89 in her beloved Colorado on November 3rd. She was affiliated with the Broadmoor Resort out in beautiful Colorado for years and years. She will be deeply missed. There's a reason why somebody like Judy Belle has been inducted into 11 halls of fame, including the World Golf Hall of Fame. And it wasn't just, as I mentioned, there's a reason why she received an honorary lifetime membership into the Royal and Ancient Golf Club of St. Andrews in 2015. It's more than just being the first woman. It's because Judy Belle impacted a lot of lives and did a lot of great things for people and in the game of golf. And she carries on a fabulous legacy and will be very much missed, not only by the USGA, but by people, many, many people whose lives she touched. Again, next week, really looking forward to talking with Billy Hurley III for our special Veterans Day episode. Cameron Young the following week. Dennis Walters, another World Golf Hall of Fame member, the week of Thanksgiving. Busy and exciting November for you. Again, we thank Joe Bronson, and thank you all very much for listening as we sign off on this episode of Musings on Golf.